We're about to start JC202 practice test at 250 words per minute. But before doing so, I have to tell you that Marge thought that that joke that I had on 201 was kind of lame. And then I realized that's because I didn't have the attached picture of this haggard old lady. Anyway, I want to make up by reading this little joke. It's titled A True Canadian Joke. It's game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, and a man makes his way to a seat right at center ice. He sits down noticing that the seat next to him is empty. He leans over and asks his neighbor if someone will be sitting there. No, says the neighbor, the seat is empty. This is incredible, said the man. Who in their right mind would have a seat like this for the final game of the Stanley Cup playoffs and not use it? The neighbor says, well, actually, the seat belongs to me. I was supposed to come with my wife, but she passed away. This is the first Stanley Cup we haven't been together since we got married in 1976. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That's terrible, but couldn't you find someone else? A friend or relative or even a neighbor to take the seat? The man shakes his head. No, they're all at the funeral. Okay, you may have heard that before. Anyway, let's begin at 250. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we have now reached the stage in this trial when I will deliver my charge to you wherein, among other things, I will explain the law as it relates to the facts in this particular case. You will then retire to the jury room to deliberate and decide whether the accused is guilty or not guilty. First, I will deal with the general concepts applicable to the trial. I will then summarize the arguments presented by counsel, review possible verdicts you may bring in, and then advise you as to your duties in the jury room. To begin with, let me make it clear that when I advise you as to the law, you must accept my advice in that regard and apply the law as I shall state it to you. You were advised yesterday not to confuse law with justice or indeed with compassion. I need to emphasize that your role is to decide this case in accordance with the law. Now, in relation to the facts, you are the sole judges of the facts. It is your function to decide what facts have been proven in this case from the evidence which you have heard and to decide what inferences are to be drawn from the facts. You alone will decide what evidence you believe and what evidence you do not believe. You will decide on the whole of the evidence whether the accused is guilty or not guilty of second-degree murder or the lesser-included offense to which I will refer. Your duty to your community is to ascertain if a crime was committed and whether the accused committed the crime. You have a responsibility to ensure that he is not improperly convicted. In fulfilling this duty, you must remain entirely impartial. You have to decide on the guilt or innocence of the accused without fear, sympathy, or prejudice. If anyone has told you anything about this matter outside of this courtroom, or if you have read anything that is related, you must erase it from your mind. It is essential that you decide the outcome solely on the evidence that was presented during this trial. In my charge to you, it is likely I will give my opinion about certain evidence or state that something has been proven. But you are not bound by any opinion which I may express. The same principle applies to the arguments presented by both counsel. While you should give careful consideration to their submissions related to the facts, you are not bound by any opinion they may express. Their views are not evidence. The evidence you must consider is the testimony given by the witnesses under oath and the exhibits that were introduced, and nothing is proven as a fact until you find it to be so. I intend to briefly review the evidence with you, but if I neglect to mention certain evidence, it does not mean that it is not important. You must consider all of the evidence, whether I refer to it or not. As I indicated to you at the outset of this trial, the accused enters these proceedings presumed to be innocent. That presumption of innocence remains throughout the case until such time as the Crown has, on the evidence put before you, satisfied you beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused is guilty. Now, what does the expression beyond a reasonable doubt mean? Reasonable doubt is not an imaginary or frivolous doubt. It must not be based upon sympathy or prejudice. Rather, it is based on reason and common sense. It is logically derived from the evidence or absence of evidence. Even if you believe the accused is probably guilty or likely guilty, that is not sufficient. In those circumstances, you must give the benefit of the doubt to the accused and acquit because the Crown has failed to satisfy you of the guilt of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt. On the other hand, you must remember that it is virtually impossible to prove anything to an absolute certainty, and the Crown is not required to do so. Such a standard of proof is impossibly high. Reasonable doubt falls much closer to absolute certainty than to proof on a balance of probabilities. In summary, if based upon the evidence before the court you are sure that the accused committed the offense with which he is charged, you should convict because this demonstrates that you are satisfied of his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The rule of reasonable doubt applies to the credibility of the witnesses. This includes witnesses whose evidence you have heard by way of videotaped statements. You do not have to decide on the credibility of an individual witness or group of witnesses. You need not firmly believe or firmly disbelieve one witness or a group of witnesses. Simply put, if at the end of the case you have a reasonable doubt as to the guilt of the accused arising from the credibility or believability of a witness or witnesses, then you must find the accused not guilty. In this particular trial, the accused did not testify before you, and he did not present any defense evidence. Although he had the option to do so, it is critical that I remind you that the accused does not have to present evidence or prove anything in this case. The accused is not obliged to prove his innocence. It is Crown Counsel who must prove the guilty of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt from start to finish. If Crown Counsel has not satisfied you of his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, you must find the accused not guilty of the offense with which he has been charged. As the judges of the facts, you will examine the evidence, assess the credibility of the witnesses, decide what weight you will give to the evidence, and decide what facts have been proven. Now, you may be wondering, what is evidence? By evidence, I mean the testimony of the witnesses and the exhibits filed, including admissions that may have been made. A fact is something which you, the jury, decide has been proven by the evidence. It is the evidence which you believe and accept as correct. When you are examining the evidence in the process of fact-finding, examine individual facts in the context of the evidence as a whole, not separately or in isolation. You must avoid applying the reasonable doubt test to proof of individual facts. Remember that the reasonable doubt test applies only to the proof of the guilt of the accused and proof of the essential elements of the offense. From the facts which you determine have been proven, you may find that certain other facts can be logically inferred. We sometimes refer to this as proof based on circumstantial evidence. You are entitled to draw inferences which logically arise from the facts you find to have been proven. Once you have decided what facts have been proven and have drawn the proper inferences from them, you will take all of this into account in the context of the whole of the evidence in deciding whether you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt of the guilt of the accused. In relation to credibility of witnesses, you are the sole judges of their believability. You have heard and seen each of them when they testified. You will assess their credibility or truthfulness by drawing on your own experiences in dealing with people. In some cases, you may believe everything a witness said or nothing of what the witness said. In other instances, you may believe part of the testimony of a witness and reject other parts. Further, merely because evidence has not been denied does not mean that you should automatically assume that it is true. Well, folks, if you were able to get within 95% accuracy of that, give yourself a big pat on the back. Over and out.